This is Farage Against the Machine, and joining me today is controversial media figure Piers Morgan. Piers, a couple of weeks' time, the 45th president of the USA is coming to the United Kingdom. You know him. You've known him a long time. He's got 52 million Twitter followers, and he only follows 45 people, one of them being you. I thought I'd get that in first. And how do you think, you know, nearly 18 months on, how's he doing?
I think it's a very mixed bag with Trump. And I think the thing that I always try and remind people is, look, for all the kind of more outrageous stuff that's been happening, and there's a particularly outrageous one from my point of view going on right now with this separation policy of kids from people who come over the southern border. But notwithstanding that, there are also some very big picture things that Trump is doing, which have clearly so far proven to be successful, not least the performance of the economy, of the jobs market, and other things that people predicted when he won would all go to hell in a handcart. So I think to look at Trump in totality is important. For a lot of people who voted for Trump, he is delivering big time on what he said he would do. And in the end, that makes him quite a rare politician.
Well, doesn't it just? And I saw recently his approval rating amongst Republican voters was higher than Ronnie Reagan's was at this stage of the saga. Now, you're absolutely right. He's delivering on what he said he'd do. It makes me laugh, actually, when he delivers promises and they all go, oh, isn't this awful? Well, It kind of is democracy. But I'm really interested because last year on Bastille Day, you know, Macron, President Macron, diametrically opposed to Trump on everything to do with global governance, immigration, and yet the red carpet was rolled out for Trump on Bastille Day. How do you think the establishment, the political establishment and media establishment are going to treat him here?
Well, I think there's a good lesson there in how you should respect the country and the office of the US presidency and try and hold your nose about your personal antipathy towards the man perhaps currently occupying the Oval Office. Whether you love or hate Trump, he's the democratically elected leader of our number one ally, the country that we turn to for military support, for financial support, for all sorts of support. And the idea that we're going to have a bigger protest for Donald Trump when he comes here than we have done for Vladimir Putin when he got a state visit, Robert Mugabe when he got a state visit, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia recently came without a murmur from the left-wing protesters in this country. So I simply say it's about balance. You know, if we want to make a point about Donald Trump, I think there are better ways to do it than have millions of people flooding the streets screaming abuse at the guy. He is the American president. That brings with it, to me, a need for us to be respectful of the office that he holds.
Well, I hope you're right, although I fear that isn't going to be the case. You know, we're told he's going to meet the Queen. That, of course, will mean a lot to him because I know that his mother loved the Queen and he thinks she's amazing. I mean, I'm wondering whether maybe they're going to have to helicopter him into Buckingham Palace to avoid all the protests.
Well, look, he's going to have his the Beast, the car. He's going to have 280 Secret Service. He'll have the Marine One. He'll have Air Force One. He can get around without being too bothered by protesters. And, of course, Trump is used to protesters and he's used to being combative with them. I don't think that'll bother him too much. I think what he does want, though, he wants to have a good relationship with this country. His mother was British. She was born and raised in Scotland till she was 18. Trump himself told me he considered himself to be half British. And there is a point with Trump when, for all the stuff that people don't like that he's doing, there is also stuff he's doing that is actually rather good and rather effective. And I think you have to take a wider view about Trump and you have to say, look, what is in the best interest of this country? We're coming out of the European Union. Trump made it clear to me when I interviewed him in Davos that we would be top of the list, as far as he's concerned, for a good new trade deal. And we will desperately need to start doing good new trade deals out of the EU to make sense of Brexit and to deliver what you said.
No, absolutely.
I simply say being too antagonistic to him is wrong. By all means, express your disapproval. By all means, say that you don't agree with him. By all means, you know, get outraged when there's a reason to be outraged. But the kind of state of perpetual outrage has been about Trump, I think, has been massively overblown.
No, I couldn't agree more. And as I say, you know, if the French can be nice to him, then I'm sure we can find it in our hearts to behave in
Macron,
a dignified manner.
I think Macron plays Trump very well. They have a very good personal relationship, as I do with Trump. And yet I regularly attack him on in my columns or on social media for stuff I don't agree with. And I think Macron, you know, he went to the White House. He had a great time with Trump and did all the kissing and the hugging and the handshakes. Then he went into Congress and whacked Trump all over the place about policy. That's a perfectly reasonable position to have.
Now, Piers, I'm interested with the American angle because, you know, you've worked in America, you've broadcast in America, and I'm struck. I've just been on Good Morning Britain with you, a show that you star in and a show that's doing very well. And I notice, you know, I mean, I grew up with television presenters who, I mean, you know, they'd moved on from wearing a dinner jacket and Lord Reith's days, but I'm used to the idea of a television presenter asking questions but never giving an opinion. And I watch you on Good Morning Britain, and you're not shy about giving your opinion, are you?
No, I absolutely said when I first came on this job, look, I'm a very opinionated person. That's basically what I do. I get up, I express opinions on Twitter, I write very opinionated columns, and if I'm going to do a morning show, I'm not going to be your standard morning breakfast fare. I'm going to be highly opinionated. If you can deal with that, I said to ITV, great, I'll do it. If you can't, I'm not your guy. And to their credit, they've let me just be myself. And what we've found is people like opinions. They may not even agree with me half the time, but they like people to express firm opinions and to get debate going in the morning about a lot of very serious and sometimes very trivial issues. But I do think debate is the cornerstone of democracy. Mm. What's worried me a lot about the way democracy's been going in this country, in America, is all this no-platforming nonsense at universities and so on, where people want to shut down any kind of debate with people they don't agree with. That is not what a democracy is. A democracy is about different views and people debating and arguing about them. That's the point of freedom of speech. And I get very angry when I see, particularly, I'm afraid, the liberals, and I'm probably more liberal than not, when I see my fellow liberals trying to shut down any right-wing commentators, for example, I'm like, well, that's not what democracy should be.
No, but it's very different, isn't it? I mean, I'm sensing with what you're doing on Good Morning Britain and very much with what LBC have been doing, where they have diverse broadcasters from James O'Brien to myself. Right. Well, that's two different ends of the spectrum in many, many ways. Are we seeing, in terms of comment journalism on television, are we seeing effectively the Americanization of our television?
I think possibly, yeah. But I think it's more to do with social media, actually. I think social media, as it's grown more and more popular, has really fueled people arguing in a public forum. And that wasn't there before. You had to just rely on watching television, listen to radio. Now you can all have your debate all through the day at any time or hour of the day. That, I think, has changed the way broadcasters need to respond to the fact that everyone's waking up and they're all arguing with each other. You can't ignore that, and nor can you sit back anymore, I don't think, and be completely impartial. I think you have to have opinions.
So where does this leave the BBC? I mean, look, at the moment, they're massive. But if you look at the demographic of who's listening to them on the radio, who's watching their news programmes, it's getting pretty old. Does the BBC now face a serious problem if people like you on ITV are doing what you're doing?
Well, what's interesting is certainly in the breakfast show wars, the BBC does well. It gets probably double our audience, and it was three times the audience. But they've certainly not grown at all in the last 2 years. And Good Morning Britain, which is highly opinionated by comparison, has grown by 35%. So there are clear numbers there to suggest that people do want actually more than just a very non-partisan, quite dull news fare. But my issue with the BBC really is that they pretend that they don't have opinions. Some of the most opinionated people I know work at the BBC, and they all tend to be left-wing, the ones that I know. And I would rather they were just honest. I don't think people would mind. I pay my license fee. I'd rather that they all started whatever they were talking about by saying, look, personally speaking, I believe this. I do that with you a lot. You and I, you know, agree about some stuff and totally disagree about other things. Heathrow expansion today was a good example. And I'll chew you up over it, and I expect you to come back strongly as you do. That's called democratic debate. When the BBC pretends that its journalists are not predominantly one side.
Well, of course they are. We all know they are.
Well, you can tell by the coverage of Brexit and also the coverage of Donald Trump in particular, which is almost universally negative. Well, of course it's going to be, because most of the people that work at the BBC hate Donald Trump. So I think we are more transparent, and I think that is beginning to work in our favour.
What constitutes fake news? Because I wonder about this. I wonder whether anyone giving an opinion could be said by the other side to be fake news.
I think it's a dangerous thing, this fake news debate. I know why Trump does it. He gets fed up with the universally negative coverage of him. But I think the problem with calling everything fake news or whole networks like CNN, where I used to work, is that actually a lot of what they do is very important, good journalism. Some of their stuff perhaps has been over the top on Trump. But I think, broadly speaking, we need networks like CNN, particularly when you have very partisan networks in America like Fox News, MSNBC, both of which I can watch and enjoy, even though they're completely different from their political standpoint. So I think we have to be careful about dismissing everything as fake news, because once you go down that road, people don't know what to believe. You know, facts should always be sacred and important. Debate around those facts, I think, is a different matter. That you can be as partisan as you like. You can argue about a fact, but you can't change the fact.
Now, Piers, you present this programme, Good Morning Britain. You write your articles. You tweet. And from what I can see, you're tweeting virtually at all hours of the day and night. I mean, you're a bit Trump-like in that sense. You obviously don't sleep very much. What does Piers Morgan do? I mean, I did meet you at the cricket the other day, and we had a glass of something. Does Piers Morgan ever really switch off?
Well, I think that my whole world professionally revolves around being aware of what's going on and expressing opinions. Twitter, to me, you know, I used to run the Daily Mirror and the News of the World and huge audiences, but I now have more Twitter followers, 6.5 million, than I ever had readers of the papers I used to edit. So I have a bigger platform on my own to express opinions, to engage in debate, to, you know, promote stuff, to criticize stuff. And I think that's the way that everything's changed. Social media has become what used to be mainstream media's domain. And I think that people don't want to wait anymore. They don't want to wait till the following morning's papers. It's one of the problems the papers have. That's why I give print newspapers not much of a shelf life now, because people don't have the patience anymore to wait for a paper. They want to wake up and they want to know what's going on. Bang, slap them in the eyes with opinions.
Now they do, and they get that on Twitter and they get that on blogs. And as you say, waiting to read the next morning's papers doesn't work. Well, the game's changing very, very fast. The one thing for certain is that Piers Morgan is, I think, one of the most controversial journalistic figures of the modern age. And I have to tell you, folks, I'm certain of one thing. He's not going away anytime soon. Piers, thanks for joining me.
Good to be with you.
And thanks for joining us on Farage Against the Machine.